This is the Winchester Talking Newspaper for the week ending the 11th of January 2019. Hello and welcome to the Winchester and District Chronicle for the week ending the 11th of January, which this week have been edited by Margaret Boyden and Linda Vincent. Your readers today are Nikki Baring.
Hello.
Norma York.
Hello.
And Andrew Parkinson.
Hello.
And I'm your presenter, Keith Vincent. The main headlines this week: landmark likely to collapse in a flood, M3 lorry park fears over Brexit, and civic chiefs urged to be bold with bus station plan. We have the story behind the first headline, please, Nikki.
Which was landmark likely to collapse in a flood. A Winchester landmark could be destroyed and a major bridge damaged if flood defence works are not carried out, a report has revealed. Civic chiefs are growing concerned about the city mill and city bridge unless measures are taken soon. They have rushed through a decision to approve an additional £500,000 spending. The money, approved by Winchester City Council's Cabinet, will be spent on the second phase of the Derngate Flood Relief Scheme, which aims to control the flow of water from the River Itchen. The project, which includes installing three new sluice gates, had initially been estimated to cost £720,000. However, further investigative and technical work has meant significant changes to the design and brings the cost to £1.25 million. It was agreed by councillors that the extra £500,000 would come from Community Infrastructure Levy, CIL, funding, money generated from a charge on new developments, with the remaining £30,000 left over from Phase 1. According to a report to Cabinet, the spending decision was treated as a matter of urgency due to fears of existing external funding being withdrawn. Given the importance of the scheme in reducing the threat of future flooding in the central area of Winchester and the serious negative impact this would have on the city, it is recommended that the council allocates a further sum of £500,000 of its CIL receipts to ensure the project is fully funded and can be implemented without undue delay. It added, the National Trust has been repairing City Mill from the flood damage suffered in 2014 and have been carrying out modelling work on the stability of the structure. This has shown that the building is extremely vulnerable to damage from flooding at water heights which are within the anticipated flood levels in the future, according to the latest flood modelling. The analysis has shown that the damage would likely manifest as a total collapse of this Grade 2 listed building, severely restricting river conveyance and immediately threatening the city centre water lane areas with substantial flooding. There is also a risk to the downstream city bridge, a Grade 1 listed structure. Providing the second phase of the Derngate scheme would help protect the building and would thereby reduce the flood risk. Rick Weeks, Winchester City Mills manager, added, "We have been working in close partnership with Winchester City Council and the Environment Agency since the last major flood event in 2014, examining the risks and impact of flooding to the City Mill. As a result of this research and survey work, the National Trust carried out a major publicly supported structural restoration in 2018. A secondary phase of resilience works to mitigate the effects of flooding is underway now and due to be completed this year. We are also working on a number of joint measures with the Environment Agency and the Council to do everything we can to protect the mill, the wider landscape and the community in the event of future flooding. As previously reported, Winchester City Mill is the oldest working water mill in Britain and dates back more than 1,000 years. But during the winter of 2013-14, Hampshire suffered some of the heaviest rainfall in around 200 years, with areas of Winchester underwater and the city mill being damaged.
Park fears over Brexit. The Liberal Democrat leader has warned that a 20-mile southbound stretch of the M3 could be closed to cope with the backup lorries at Portsmouth Ferry Port in case of a no-deal Brexit. The worst-case scenario, which would affect the motorway between Winchester and Basingstoke, according to national reports, was revealed to Sir Vince Cable, leader of the Lib Dems, as he visited Portsmouth International Port to learn of the preparations for the UK departure from the European Union. The port currently handles 500 lorries a day, but this is set to at least double in the case of a no deal, as it is set to relieve some of the burden faced by Dover. Port director Mike Sellers said the distance from the freight gates to the motorway network was only 13 lorry lengths, and the introduction of any delays to processing the vehicles onto the ferry would lead to lorries back onto the motorways. He said attempts to use nearby land as a lorry park and processing area had been thwarted because the MOD refused to release the land while another site 20 minutes away had been located, but it did not have the required infrastructure in place. Mr. Sellers also said the customs infrastructure required would not be in place by the end of March. He said Portsmouth is seen as one of the high-risk ports that could be impacted from the no deal, and we want to be Brexit ready even if in a no deal. There's an awful lot of infrastructure that needs to be put in place, and the cost and whether that will be in place by the end of March is another question. Sir Vince said, "What I'm very concerned about is that government simply hasn't thought through this no-deal Brexit that they talk about. It's a very amateurish dad's army approach. The problem here is that Portsmouth will have to take considerably more lorries. They have to get through quickly, and there will be customs checks where there is nowhere at the moment to store the lorries. The government is taking no interest in demands, and there is additional lorry space. There are plans to close the M3 to use it for storage. Extreme solutions of that kind." A Highways England spokesman said, "We currently have no plans to use any section of the M3 or other parts of the strategic road network to hold lorries should there be disruption at Portsmouth Port, and we would have significant concerns with any suggested plan that proposed it."
And this article is headlined, "Civic Chiefs Urge to Be Bold with the Bus Station Plan." And it's accompanied by an artist's impression of how the bus station area could look with some quite nice trees and a pedestrian area. Business leaders have urged civic chiefs to be big and bold in a major Winchester project. That call came after Winchester City Council met businesses and cultural and creative entrepreneurs at a workshop to share ideas and desires for how best to use the underutilised space on the Winchester bus station site. Owned by the City Council, the site forms part of the Central Winchester Regeneration Project Area, commonly known as Silver Hill 2, and has been identified as a possible location for meanwhile use opportunities. As previously reported, plans have been floated by the City Council to turn the space into a hub for food and retail pop-up businesses similar to those in York and London. The bus station will eventually be vacated by the buses, which, according to the scheme's supplementary planning document, could relocate to the Middlebrook Street car park. More than a dozen businesses and entrepreneurs were invited to the Council's recent workshop. During the two-hour event, there was an emphasis on listening and openness to the ideas and suggestions shared. According to a City Council spokesman, there was also a strong appreciation of the big picture for the site, recognising it as a real opportunity to deliver positive benefits for the economy and residents of the Winchester district. The attendees encouraged the Council to be big and bold in its regeneration plans. The next steps of the project will see the suggestions from the event considered as part of the feasibility study on the bus station site, the result of which will then be shared with potential bidders to carry out the work. Councillor Caroline Horrell, council leader and chairman of the CWR committee, said, "Getting the site into use as a vibrant part of the city centre is a key consideration for this area, and a key aspect of the Central Winchester Regeneration Project.
Thank you. That concludes the headlines. Now we continue with the death announcements, followed by Christian comment, letters, historical, chronicle comment, and first person and Belgarum. And then we'll have announcements and what's on. So the death announcements for this week. Alexander, Norman Alexander, died on the 28th of December, peacefully at home, aged 97. Boutet, Helene Boutet, cardiographer, who died on the 19th of December in Rouen, France, aged 61. Cooper, Ruth Hall Cooper, who died on the 23rd of December, aged 93. Davy, Joan Ivy Davy, died peacefully in hospital on the 1st of January, aged 80. Gibbs, Michael Leonard Gibbs, died on the 4th of January, aged 79. Hosking, Sandy Hosking, died on the 17th of December. Long, Fay Long, died peacefully at home, aged 80. Luke, Greener Luke, died peacefully on the 2nd of January, aged 87. Maybe, David John Maybe, died after a short illness, aged 69. Mullins, Andrea Carroll Mullins, died peacefully on the 30th of December, aged 53. Reeves, Kenneth Edward Reeves, died peacefully on the 31st of December, aged 86. Revel, Surgeon Vice Admiral Anthony Revel, former Surgeon General, who died peacefully after a long illness. Thursfield, Carol Thursfield, died peacefully on the 3rd of January, aged 96. Ward, Mavis Gwendolyn Ward, died after a short illness, aged 90. And Williamson, Helen Williamson, died on the 1st of January. And now we've got a Christian comment read by Andrew, please.
The title this week is To Err is Human, To Forgive is Divine. Occasionally, I meet people who are consumed with a sense of guilt and accompanying shame. For years, they have carried the burden. Sometimes it retreats into the back of their minds, but then it suddenly resurfaces. The result of this often brings a sense of alienation. Alienation from the church and from God himself. So acute can be the feeling, especially for people living alone, that the whole thing can become magnified in their minds, and then it can lead to severe depression. To such people, the life of Jesus Christ should come as good news, and this is why the Christmas story speaks of the manifestation or disclosure of who God is and why he came down to earth from heaven, who is God and Lord of all, as the carol puts it. In Jesus, as a baby, as a youth, and as a man, God became one of us. Put another way, the feelings we all have, the pain we suffer, whether it be in body, mind, or spirit, he too experienced. He knows what it is like to be human, what human frailty is like, and what it is like to know the reality of the slings and arrows of outrageous fortune, as Shakespeare once said, and in which I wholeheartedly believe. Particularly, they hold out hope for all when they refer to God's abiding mercy and kindness, which springs from his understanding of human nature in all its frailty and complexity. The 18th century poet, Alexander Pope, coined the phrase, "To err is human, to forgive is divine." This forgiveness is constantly on offer, and all it should take to have confidence in that forgiveness is penitence.
Thank you. Now we're moving on to letters to the editor. Nikki, you've got the first letter, I think.
Which is from Hazel Agomba and headed Parking in City. Sir, far from putting off visitors, as suggested by Mr. Howard, Chronicle December 27, the City Council's parking tariffs are designed to make Winchester an even better place to visit, live and work. By making central car parking more expensive and encouraging parking on the edge of the city, the Council aims to ease congestion and improve air quality. Winchester is such an eminently walkable city that only a minority of visitors have genuine need to park centrally. Mr. Howard could have used the well-signed park and ride and stayed as long as he wished for £3. That includes the bus fare for up to 6 vehicle occupants. The railway and bus stations are conveniently located near the main shops and restaurants. Offering cheap city centre car parking is no longer justifiable. A plethora of reports detailing the harm to health from traffic-generated air pollution have been published. The invisible toxins from exhausts cause a range of diseases, including cancers, heart disease and dementia. Annually, 51 premature deaths are caused by particulate pollution alone in the Winchester district, Public Health England 2014. Dirty air is now a major concern for many people, according to the recent Movement Strategy survey. The parking tariffs are certainly a step in the right direction, but much more action needs to be taken. Current car parking prices are nowhere near enough to compensate our city for the damage that cars do to the population's health and the city's economic welfare. All the research shows that towns that are least car dependent are the most well off in terms of economic vitality. In addition, our medieval streets could be put to much better public or commercial use if street space and parking land was released. The momentum for reducing city centre traffic is growing in many cities in the UK as the true costs of congestion are acknowledged. I am hopeful that the Movement Strategy will deliver real change. A visionary transport system where walking, cycling and public transport are genuinely prioritised would make Winchester an outstanding place to live, work and visit. And that from Hazel Agomba, Egbert Road, Hyde, Winchester.
And this is another one about parking. Sir, in response to a letter on December the 27th by Mr. Howard, Winchester is a wonderful place to visit, especially during the Christmas period, and I'm disappointed that you feel that Winchester City Council does not encourage this. I can assure you that we welcome visitors over the festive period, as at other times of the year, and put a number of measures in place to encourage people to come into town during this busy time and make their stay as enjoyable as possible. To this end, the City Council pays for additional park and ride services and variable messaging signs, which give up-to-date parking information for drivers in conjunction with the Winchester Business Improvement District. And we also provide additional coach parking, which helps accommodate the increased demands in November and December. I recognise that parking in central Winchester for more than 4 hours is not cheap, but we offer a good range of options for our visitors based on our car parking strategy, which supports our air quality action plan for the city centre. The parking charges across Winchester are designed to encourage those staying for longer periods of time to use either car parks on the edge of the city, such as the Chesil Multistory and the Cattle Market, where you can park all day for £7 and easily walk into town, or our excellent park and ride service, which costs £3 or £2.50 per day, depending on the time of arrival. Going forward, I will look at how the council can improve the branding and signing of our car parks, which will better reflect their main purpose and the corresponding charges for using them. This will complement the City of Winchester Movement Strategy, which is an exciting piece of work and we are carrying out with our county colleagues, and will form part of our new car parking strategy, which we will be preparing this year. I hope that your experience does not put you off coming to visit us. And again, we look forward to welcoming you in the near future. And that's from Councillor Jan Warwick, Portfolio Holder for Environmental and Transport, and Councillor for Badgers Farm and Oliver's Battery Ward.
And this letter was sent in by Penny Jeffries, who's chairman of the Winchester Chamber Orchestra, and it's titled Concert Venues. Sir, Last June, Winchester Chamber Orchestra, a local amateur orchestra, celebrated its 30th anniversary. We were honoured to have Lady Appleyard, the Deputy Lord Lieutenant of Hampshire, attend our performance. One of our problems has always been to find a suitable place to perform twice yearly, with reasonably good acoustics and able to hold an audience of up to 250 at a price we, and our audiences, can afford. We have been extremely lucky to have been able to perform in St. Paul's Church for a number of years, and we are indebted to Reverend Canon Peter Seal and his team for their unfailing generosity and help in hosting our concerts over the years. However, St. Paul's is about to undergo a major internal refurbishment, which means we are unable to perform there while the building works take place, so we have to seek out an alternative venue. This has proved a very difficult task, with many venues in Winchester being prohibitively expensive for an amateur orchestra to book. Fortunately, Holy Trinity Church in Upper Brook Street, Winchester, has now started to take bookings, so we were able to perform our New Year concert there this Saturday, January the 12th. There has been much discussion recently about the future of River Park once the new leisure centre is opened. May we therefore add to a number of similar suggestions in the Chronicle our hope that serious consideration will be given by the City Council to creating a new arts centre able to meet the needs of many similar organisations like ourselves who would like a permanent home. With 6 or 7 amateur orchestras and choirs, Winchester deserves one. And that letter was sent in by Penny Jeffers, chairman of the Winchester Chamber Orchestra, Northbrook Avenue, Winchester.
And this from Elizabeth Proudman, headed Austin Statue. Sir, there have been 2 letters in your pages recently protesting about the proposed statue in the Cathedral Close. Jill Collymore maintains that as Jane Austen only stayed in Winchester for 6 weeks before her death, we do not need another memorial to her. And Patrick Cosgrove thinks that the commissioning a statue for £250,000 is an inappropriate expense. I agree with both of them, and I also think that the monument is wrong. It shows a heavy woman standing under a tree and without a bonnet. Why a bronze tree in the close? And why is her writing table apparently in a garden? Only 2 sketches of Jane Austen survive, so her appearance is not really known. But she was described as tall and slim and pretty, and her hair curled naturally around her face. She was self-effacing and shunned publicity. Her books were published as written by a lady, and she hoped to remain anonymous. This is not the person depicted in this maquette. I hope that the project will disappear without trace, and that admirers of this great writer can imagine her in Winchester, if they wish, under a real tree and without payment. And that from Elizabeth Proudman, Trustee, Jane Austen Society, St John Street, Winchester.
And from Elizabeth Loder, Sir, the sculpture of the proposed statue of Jane Austen for the Cathedral Close is the justly famous Martin Jennings. His work, for example, John Betjeman and Philip Larkin, are magnificent pieces, instantly recognisable and infusing their persona with the intrinsic flavour of their works and fame. So, blame his brief. Who is behind it? Who approved the initial drawings? With £250,000 price tag, and long before this maquette materialised, there would have been drawings, consultations, more drawings, small examples, etc. None of our experts even knew this was proposed. None consulted, and as a result, we have a vulgar pastiche. We have Jane's coat, a dress, and enough description of her to appreciate how she should be represented. This is such a woefully wrong interpretation of a dignified Hampshire lady. Martin Jennings, so internationally recognised, must be hopping mad that this work should be so vilified. We cannot blame him. This has to be what he was guided to produce, perhaps. In view of its reception, he could be persuaded to bin the maquette. Certainly his reputation is at stake. And that was Elizabeth Loder, Marsdown Place, St Giles Hill, Winchester.
And this letter is from Mr E. Meyer, and it's titled A Farewell Letter to Winchester. It is accompanied by a fantastic photograph showing our Christmas market in the cathedral grounds on a beautiful blue sunny, under a beautiful blue sunny sky. A farewell letter to Winchester. Sir, what has happened to Winchester? Most of the independent shops have closed. The high street is ruined. The buskers have their amplifiers turned up. It has become quite common to see desperate people lying in doorways and begging. Most people are too full of themselves to notice what is happening. If Winchester is at all representative of this country, then we are in real trouble. I find the whole thing quite disheartening, not to mention Brexit and the incomplete and downright cruelty of the ruling classes. This country is in disarray. It is with a heavy heart that I have decided to leave for good. And that's from Mr. E. Meyer, Sycamore Road, Bishop's Waltham.
Thank you. That concludes the letters. Now we move on to historical items, taking a step back in time. Nikki.
200 years ago, Monday, January the 11th, 1819. The Dean and Chapter, in addition to their usual donation of coals to the poor of the several parishes, gave, in the course of the last week, blankets and sheets to 24 poor families. Many of the publicans in this city, conceiving that an unequal distribution of soldiers billeted on them has taken place, in justification of the billet masters. American pa- and a second item. American papers received this week contain the message of the President to Congress and some voluminous documents relative to the court-martial sentence and execution of the unfortunate Arbuthnot and Ambrister. The conclusion of the proceedings is to send Mr. Arbuthnot to death.
And 100 years ago, on Saturday, January the 11th, 1919, and there are two items here, a large congregation assembled in the nave of the cathedral on a Sunday afternoon on the occasion of a thanksgiving service for victory and of prayer, that the foundation of a new life may be laid on the lines of justice, order and righteousness. The opening hymn was All People That on Earth Do Dwell, which was followed by special psalms and lessons. And the second item is, the President, Honourable Mrs. Bligh, and officer of the Winchester Habitation of the Young Helpers League, Dr. Bernardo's Homes, issued a general invitation to a lantern lecture for God and Country in the Old Fellows Hall, Winchester, on Thursday afternoon and evening. At the afternoon meeting, the chair was taken by the Reverend Canon Braithwaite, but the inclemency of the weather no doubt interfered with the attendance.
And another two items, but this time from 50 years ago, on Saturday, the 11th of January, 1969. The first is, the need for more youth club facilities in Wick was stressed by the father of a defendant at Winchester County Magistrates Court on Tuesday. His son was one of eight youths, aged 14 to 15, who were charged with a number of theft and receiving offences. The father said that the boys living in the estate congregated in gangs and there was not enough social atmosphere. There was only one youth club, and that was always packed out. Four of the boys had been involved in the theft of a jacket containing a wallet and other articles to the value of £9 to £10 from the Wick Methodist Youth Club. Three had stolen three half bottles of whiskey, one half bottle of gin, and a bottle of martini from a house, and the other five boys were charged with receiving quantities of the stolen drink. The second story is about the Tower Street car park is slowly but surely beginning to catch on, said Mr. W. D. Ryder, the city treasurer, commenting on the latest figures of car parks and the coach station traffic. During the last 9 months, more than twice as many people have used the indoor car park than in the previous 7 months, being 102,188 against 50,188. In answer to a question from the Mayor, Councillor Stuart Green, he said if the present rate continued from January to March, it was possible that over 1 million vehicles will have used the 7 paying car parks by the end of the financial year. The figure, till December 31st, stands at 771,756, an increase of almost 42,500 on the corresponding time last year.
And finally, 25 years ago, Friday, January the 14th, 1994, the owner of a Winchester kitchen firm has warned of the dangers of DIY gas disconnections after he discovered a leak at a city home, the day after a leak caused a massive explosion at an Andover flat. The gas leak at the Hampshire County Council-owned flat in Abbott's Court, Park Road, was smelled by Steve George of Steve George Kitchen Appliances North Walls when he delivered an electric cooker on Sunday. "It only needed me to walk in with a cigarette and there could have been an explosion," said Mr. George. He advised Martina Fowler-Dixon, who lives in the flat with her two children, to phone the emergency section of British Gas and told her to switch off any electrical or gas appliances. And the second item, a nightclub is to open in Winchester on the site of the controversial former Red Electric Disco, but the club will have a more mature image that its predecessor. A disco and live band performance will take place at the Port House in Upper Brook Street, which has operated as a pub since August. Winchester City Council's licensing subcommittee agreed on Tuesday to transfer the former disco's entertainment licence, despite strong objections about noise from nearby residents. The Port House was granted permission to open from 8 p.m. to midnight, Monday to Wednesday and Saturday, and will remain open until 1 a.m. on Thursday and 2 a.m. on Friday nights. Right, back to the present then, and we have editorial comment, Nikki.
Which is headed, "Wrong place for the Jane Austen statue." No issue, apart from Brexit, has dominated the Chronicle Letters bag in the last few weeks than the proposed statue of Jane Austen in the Cathedral Close. The Dean and Chapter hopes to raise £250,000 for a piece that celebrates the author who died in nearby College Street in 1817. The statue would be by sculptor Martin Jennings, well known for his highly regarded figures of poets John Betjeman at St Pancras Railway Station in London and Philip Larkin in Hull. But the overwhelming response to the letters page has been opposed to the proposal. The consensus is that it is unsuitable, with one letter describing it as rampant, busty, kitsch effigy. Setting aside the eye-wateringly high financial cost, the Chronicle has to agree. The statue is in the wrong place. The Cathedral Close is one of our national treasures, an open space that has little changed in 500 years. It has gravitas and calm. The Mondrian-inspired metal sculpture that stood on the statue spot for several years was not to everyone's taste, but it was a serious work about the crucifixion in a serious place. A windstep Jane, seemingly stepping from the front pages of a Mills and Boone novel, is not, and it pains the Chronicle to say it. It is also unnecessary. She only lived here for a few weeks, and there is a beautifully understated memorial in the cathedral. That should be enough.
So now we have first person, please, Norma.
Let's Hear It for Screens by Khaled Aziz. They've got it wrong about screens. All this concern that youngsters are spending too much time in front of them is nonsense. The proposed cure limiting screen time is nonsense too, just as the advice that the only way to curb obesity is to restrict calorie intake. There's compelling evidence, both anecdotal and objective, that all diets do is to make you fatter when diet over you bounce back and pile on even more pounds. Conspiracy theorists maintain that calorie control device is put out there by food manufacturers keen that their people don't change their overall habits of craving sweetened and processed foods. Conspiracy or not, it's all about the individual relationships with food, and so with screens. When I was a child, we didn't have screens, but we had books, and we had that parental pariah, comics. I saved pocket money, initially for the Dandy and the Beano. You couldn't afford both, so you swapped them at school. Then the Beezer and the Topper, and finally the Eagle. Dandare and the Mekon would accompany you through puberty. Then you moved on to American comics, forerunners of the modern Marvel movies. I had stacks of them. In that innocent age before we knew any better and embraced the common market, these comics pulled no punches. So with the Second World War not many years behind us, they described German soldiers as Krauts and Huns, given to uttering expletives such as Achtung and Gott in Himmel, before being machine-gunned by craggy, lantern-jawed Royal Marine commandos. In fact, I guess those would have been the first German words I learnt. Imagine my confusion when, aged 9, I visited Germany to see Achtung on road signs, expecting at any second a stick grenade to be lobbed in my direction. We also devoured books, especially Enid Blyton. In 1980, she went through a Maoist condemnation from the British Literati for being too popular. How ridiculous. As a child, you knew where you were with the Famous Five and the Secret Seven. Even their dog was a hero and always did the right thing. I must get my own dog to have a read so he can see how dogs can comport themselves if they're so minded. Blyton's books had us hooked to the extent that we would read them under the bedclothes after lights out by ever-ready torch. Some kids were more into books than others, and we can all remember teasing the specky four-eyed bookworm curled up in a classroom corner during break. I imagine Bill Gates and Mark Zuckerberg were that child at school. We're not teasing them now. Back to screens. It's true, today's kids spend a lot of time in front of them, but it's what they're watching that matters. I'm as bad as any child. I'm writing this in front of a screen. I've just used a screen to book flights, car parking and hire for a forthcoming trip. I have an app on my phone which tells me when it's safe to take the dog out for a walk without the risk of being rained on. I wouldn't have it any other way. Ah, but children are different. They must be controlled. Well, of course, but the key is to embrace the screen and then time spent and nudge them into good habits. It is tough enough to prize an Xbox controller out of the mitt of a youngster who has just smashed the enemy in Call of Duty and is keen to progress to the next level. But, like diets, the advice is oversimplistic. Simply restricting the total time spent just won't work, and we will have even more addiction. So let's not reach for the facile quick fix solution. Let's help families work it out for themselves, individually. One size seldom fits all.
Thank you. Now, Andrew, I think we've got Belgarum's alternative look at the news.
Yes, and this is headlined, perhaps tongue-in-cheek, "Welcome to another phone repairer." Belgarum appears to have been oblivious to the problems that residents in Winchester have with their mobile phones. At least that's the assumption made by the latest addition to the high street of yet another phone repair shop. PhoneTech, which appears to have opened since the new year, becomes the fifth such business within a five-minute walk. It joins Cell Repair, which opened in May, next to the now-defunct Pecan Restaurant, and Phone World in High Street, plus Imomax Mobile in the corner of Parchment Street and St. George's Street, and the regular market stall holder in Middlebrook Street. The new store has taken over the former Caracoli Cafe next to Ask Italian, which closed in September. Speaking at the time, Nathan Bryant, head of operations, told the Chronicle, "We have decided to concentrate on the other key stores, particularly Alsford, which is the original Caracoli. We've always thought of the Winchester store as a trial, and in the end it didn't really hold true to our brand values. The closure was done in a positive way, and we are looking to open more stores in the model of the Alsford and Hazelmere stores in the future. Mr. Bryant added, staff members from the Winchester branch were offered jobs at other Caracoli branches, which remain open in Alsford, Farnham, Hazelmere and Guildford. And the article is accompanied by four photographs, each showing one of the phone repair shops within this five-minute walk.
Thank you. So now we move on to the announcements and what's on. We start with what's on this week. There's only one item. It's the pantomime Puss in Boots at the Plaza in Romsey. The RAODS in Romsey present a hilarious family pantomime, and that's running until Saturday the 26th of January. You can either go online to www.ticketsource.co.uk or you can telephone 01794 523 054. That's 01794 523 054. A lighting up time ends Friday the 11th of January at 8:05 a.m. and begins at 4:21 p.m. And next Wednesday, the 16th of January, it ends at 8:02 a.m. and begins at 4:29 p.m. If you know someone who is sight impaired and would like to receive our recordings, or if you have a problem with the recording you receive from us, please telephone Mary Davis on 01962 711998. With further items of general news, Nikki.
I have a choice here between Brexit or hamsters, and I'm afraid you're going to get the hamsters. Safe new home for hurled hamsters. Two hamsters, which were thrown out of the window of a moving car in Winchester, have now been rehomed. Buddy and Gizmo, who were caged at the time, were found in Swan Lane in the city centre around 12:55 p.m. on Tuesday, November the 27th. Animal welfare experts at the RSPCA launched an appeal for witnesses after the incident. RSPCA Inspector Jan Edwards said at the time, "We had a call from a member of the public who'd heard a large bang, and when they went outside, saw some children with a hamster cage they'd seen thrown from a moving vehicle. Inside were two Roborovsky hamsters, one of which sadly had injuries to the nose and face. I'm now investigating what happened to the hamsters and who was responsible for discarding them in such a dangerous and cruel way. I'd like to hear from anyone who may know where they have come from or who saw anything suspicious in the area. I'd also like to hear from anyone who recognises the cage, which had clean bedding and water bottles, or the box of extra supplies, including sawdust bedding, which was also thrown from the vehicle. After being cruelly discarded by the side of the road, the hamsters were cared for by the team at RSPCA Ashley Heath Animal Centre in Ringwood until last Wednesday, when a new owner came forward. The owner, who did not want to be identified, but sent in photos of the pair enjoying their new life, said they are very happy in their new home and are enjoying a new start to their life. Such a sad story, but a happy ending. I've had Roborovsky hamsters for 8 years now, so gaining Gizmo and Buddy's trust shouldn't take long. They're so gentle, I'm just so happy to have them because they will be spoiled with love here. And there's a lovely picture of a golden hamster with his little beady eye looking out at us.
Making Mass Fun for Charity, NSPCC. A national child welfare charity is encouraging Hampshire schools to participate in Number Day. NSPCC are aiming to get every nursery, primary and secondary school in the county to take part in their event, which is a maths-inspired fundraising day. The curriculum-based activities that are part of the Number Day resemble famous game shows, including Blockbusters and Who Wants to Be a Millionaire. Pupils will also be encouraged to dress up for digits and make a donation to wear an item of clothing with a number on it. Emma Ackard, NSPCC Schools Area Coordinator for Hampshire, said, "We are hoping for lots of schools to sign up to what can be a great day of learning and play. By getting children involved in our numbers-based activities, you can also help us be there for children when they need us most. This year, we've refreshed our materials to ensure that everyone can join in the fun, even if maths isn't their favourite subject. Funds raised from Number Day will go towards NSPCC services such as Speak Out, Stay Safe.
And my article also offers a choice. In this case, it is either torture by fire or by Lego. Local hospices, Naomi House and Jack's Place, will open two new charity challenges next month. Staff will be setting up a Lego walk and a fire walk at the Holiday Inn, Mourne Hill, to raise money. Challengers will be invited to take steps barefoot across a path of either Lego or 649-degree hot coals on February the 8th from 4 p.m. Charlotte Patrick, who's the events fundraiser at Naomi House, said, "We are so excited and pleased to be able to offer these brand new and unique events to our supporters. We know that a fire walk may not be for everyone. So by including a Lego walk in our events programme, we hope to attract lots of people of all ages to raise money for vital medical care and support offered to hundreds of life-limited and life-threatened children and adults in their local area." Amazingly, and that's my comment, it says, "No prior training is required apart from a short seminar before the event. Both walks cost £25 to enter and are part of this year's Challenge Events programme, the biggest Naomi House and Jack's Place has ever hosted. Other events in 2019 will include the Jukebox, Jog and Glow Run."
And this one is Sports Hall turned into antique venue. Hundreds gathered in a Winchester Sports Hall on the first day of the year for the annual antique fair. The Antiques, Collectibles and Decorative Arts Fair drew many people to River Park Leisure Centre, where the hall had been converted into a market-style venue. Regular dealers and enthusiasts, along with additional traders, provided a cheery atmosphere as visitors wandered around browsing. Stall holders offered a variety of items, from crockery to coins and even antique weaponry. The fair has been running for more than 30 years and it is established on the collectible circuit as one of the best for New Year's Day. This year's event was organised by Grandma's Attic Fairs, which took the reins in early 2018 and has hosted many events in the city since. On April the 2nd, the next market will be held again at River Park Leisure Centre, and that's on April the 2nd. And there are many photographs, one of the leisure centre, which is as it is, and various people looking at various stalls of pottery and various collectibles and really, actually, a lot of stalls. It's obviously a big event.
No blue badge misuse prosecutions. Two of Hampshire's biggest councils have not prosecuted a single person for misusing disabled parking permits in the current financial year, it has emerged. Neither Hampshire County Council or Southampton City Council took legal action against the crimes since April last year. It comes after new figures found that 94 out of 152 English local authorities across the country did not pursue anyone for abusing the blue badge scheme. The permits allow holders to park free of charge in a pay and display bays and for up to 3 hours on yellow lines, while those in London are exempt from the congestion charge. Nevertheless, Southampton says that 8 simple cautions have been issued as an alternative to prosecution, with more than 60 warnings and advisory letters sent out. Hampshire did not give a caution figure, but says that it will take action where deemed necessary, and has retained almost 1,300 badges in the past 3 years. The City Council added that between April 2015 and March 2018, seven people were prosecuted for misusing the permits in Southampton, with 3,730 parking charges also issued to motorists parked in disabled bays who either did not display a badge or had used an expired, lost, stolen and deceased person's badge. Now Transport Boss Councillor Jackie Raymond is calling on people to report any suspected fraud. Southampton City Council takes parking fraud of any kind very seriously, she said. We would advise anyone who suspects somebody of misusing a blue badge or permit to email relevant information to the parking.services@southampton.gov.uk. A spokesperson for Hampshire County Council added, "We do take action to address the misuse of the blue badge. If it is found that a blue badge is being used inappropriately, a formal warning is issued and the badge may be retained. There are over 60,000 badge holders in the county, and in the last 3 years we have retained almost 1,300 badges. Nationally, the number of blue badges reported stolen increased by 45% to 4,246. Phil Talbot of disability charity Scope said, "It's disgraceful that so many local councils have failed to take action against people misusing blue badges."
And this article is headlined, "Several Bins Set Alight, and is accompanied by a couple of photographs of the plastic wheelie bins looking very, very damaged. Firefighters rushed to Winnall in the early hours of Monday after a number of bins were set alight. Residents said around a dozen wheelie bins had been targeted. 10 bins were set alight in Winnall Manor Road, one in Shepherd's Road, and more were set on fire in Longfield Road. Kira Bowers, a student at the University of Winchester, living in Longfield Road, whose bin was torched, said, "I'm honestly so confused. I got in the early hours this morning and didn't see anyone or anything around. Hopefully no one has been hurt and it doesn't happen again." Hampshire Constabulary has since confirmed that a 31-year-old man from Winchester was detained on suspicion of causing criminal damage, although officers are still appealing for information. A police spokesman said, "Police were called to this area in the early hours of this morning on a report of several wheelie bins being set on fire. On police arrival, there appeared to have been numerous bins damaged by being set on fire." Hampshire Fire and Rescue Service confirmed that a crew was called out to Longfield Road at 18 minutes past 2 in the morning and again to Winnall Manor Road at 29 minutes past 3. Anyone with information about the fires is urged to call the police on 101.
New chairman for Healthcare Trust. A new hospital's boss has paid tribute to staff after taking over as chairman. Starting this month, Steve Erskine has taken up the role at Hampshire Hospitals NHS Foundation Trust, HHFT, which runs the Royal Hampshire County Hospital in Winchester, as well as the Andover War Memorial Hospital and Basingstoke and North Hampshire Hospital. It follows the departure of Elizabeth Padmore, who stepped down after completing the maximum allowed 9-year term in December. Mr. Erskine said, "I'm looking forward to working alongside our Chief Executive, Alex Whitfield, the Board of Directors and the Council of Governors. Before I joined the Trust, I took the opportunity to meet as many members of staff and patients as I could. I heard from some very enthusiastic staff who want to provide the best care for our patients, whatever their role. I also heard patients and their families say how much they rated the care here. What I heard sounded like a good organisation that has a strong and positive future. I also believe that this future is very closely linked to successful collaborations, both with other NHS organisations and external partners. It is my view that if we all share the same goal, the best possible patient care, then we can make things even better for patients by working closely together." Before taking over at HHFT, Mr. Erskine has been an NHS non-executive director since 2011, serving as vice chairman at Portsmouth Hospitals NHS Trust, and chairman of Poole Hospital NHS Foundation Trust, sitting on the Dorset Integrated Care System Partnership Board. His business career began in Ordnance Survey, where he worked his way up the organisation to board level. He also served as a director for a home office agency and L3 Communications, a large US technology company. Alex Whitfield, HHFT Chief Executive of Hampshire Hospitals, added, "On behalf of everyone at the Trust, I'd like to offer Steve a very warm welcome. I'm looking forward to working with him and drawing on the experience he brings, both from other trusts and the world of business." There is a photograph of Steve Erskine, which I could describe as looking like a film star, but I can't remember the name of it. It's called Patrick, and he's a very nice-looking man, and I think we'll do a good job.
From cats up trees to pigs in pools. Fire crews have been called to almost 200 incidents of animals stuck in water over the past 2 years, it has been found. During the two-year period between 2017 and 2018, Hampshire firefighters have saved 284 animals from a series of perilous situations. The most calls were animals needing rescuing from water, with 102 domestic pets, such as cats, dogs and horses, 43 wild animals and 36 farm animals getting into a bother. Calls to save a swan, a gull and even a duck from water were also made. In total, 184 incidents were responded to. As well as this, and in line with the stereotype, 66 calls were made to help pets who had managed to get stuck in high places like trees. Two swans, two pigeons, a seagull and a snake also needed rescuing. In the same period, 8 calls were made to rescue pets that had managed to get stuck in below ground situations, and another 11 incidents were recorded of animals, such as a large horses, needing to be lifted by fire service equipment. Only one instance was recorded in the 2 years of a cow needing to be moved from a railway, with crews managing to get the animal away in February last year, just minutes before the rush hour. However, the Freedom of Information request, which were filed by the local Democracy Reporting Service, was unable to confirm the outcomes of the incidents or whether the animals survived. These included 11 calls to animals needing to be retrieved from water and 4 instances of heavy animals needing to be lifted. And there's a picture of 4 or 5 firefighters on the ground and 1 in the water, and they are rescuing a pig from a swimming pool in Ringwood. It blows the mind, really. What was a pig doing in a garden swimming pool?
The breaststroke.
He was rescued.
And this article is headlined, Care Home Named as Stetnell's Top Project. And it's accompanied by an artist's impression of the new Brendan Care home, which opened last summer at Otterbourne Hill, which in fact is one that I know quite well, and it's very, very, very nice inside. The project team, which built a brand new dementia care home at Otterbourne, were among employees recognised by construction contractor Stepnell at its annual awards. Brendan Care's home, which opened last summer at Otterbourne Hill, was named Regional Project of the Year at the awards ceremony, recognising the work of team members Martin Armstrong, Neil Barber, Mike Balcom, Edward Notage, Liam Wills and Matt Sargent. Stepnell's annual award ceremony was held at the Dallas Burston Polo Club in Southam, Warwickshire. Headquartered in Rugby, Stepnell currently employs around 430 people and operates through a network of regional offices, including its Hampshire base at Chandler's Ford.
The new chairman of the hospitals, Mr. Erskine, it looks like Patrick Stewart, the actor Patrick Stewart. Sorry about that. And this article, hundreds call on MP to back people's vote. More than 500 people have written an open letter to Winchester's MP outlining why there should be a people's vote over Brexit. The letter, in the form of a full-page advertisement on page 21 of this newspaper, was organised and paid for by the Winchester Liberal Democrats, although it includes several names of high-profile Wintonians not associated with the party. It comes after MP Steve Brine took out a full-page advertisement in November explaining why he thought people should support Prime Minister Theresa May's Brexit deal. In total, 504 people signed the letter, which states, "Following the European Court of Justice ruling on Article 50, the choice is, as Mrs. May herself has said, no longer between this deal and no deal, but between this deal, no deal, or no Brexit. While we agree that Mrs. May's plan is better than the disastrous option of no deal, her deal is still a bad deal for Winchester and for the country. The best deal available for Britain remains no Brexit. If, as seems likely, the vote for Mrs. May's deal is lost in Parliament, you will face the choice as to what you should do next. We ask you, in that scenario, to support a people's vote, a referendum on the final deal, which includes remaining in the EU as an option." Among those who have to have signed the letter are former Winchester City Council Chief Executive Simon Eden, former Labour City Councillor Patrick Davis, and Chris Gillam of Friends of the Earth. The letter was launched by the Lib Dems and other local European campaigners at the Buttercross on Saturday. Both Mr. Brine's and the Lib Dems' letters were paid for advertisements, and neither represents the views of the Chronicle. And there's a photograph of a whole lot of people who've all been told to raise their hands and cheer, I presume. Everybody holding a blue EU flag with all the stars in the circle around it.
Government plans for more recycling. Hampshire councils have backed plans for a new national waste scheme which looks to simplify recycling. Westminster chiefs say that the strategy has been designed to help combat climate change, safeguarding resources and reducing the flow of plastic into the ocean by 2050. It includes a call to the councils to scrap garden waste disposal charges due to the production of greenhouse gas methane if the materials end up in landfill sites. An attempt to tackle the current postcode lottery of recycling, where different materials are recyclable in different areas, and make the firms that produce materials responsible for the cost of the disposal. Industry will pay higher fees if their products are harder to reuse, repair, or recycle. Homes will also be provided with separate collections for food waste in a bid to reduce the amount thrown away. These new collections will be provided by local authorities, but further details will go to public consultation.
And this article is headlined, "Cabinet Meetings on Tour Set to Return to the District." And it's accompanied by a photograph of some of the members of the public at a council cabinet meeting in South Wanston Village Hall. A council scheme which aimed to increase resident participation in meetings will return for the first time since November, when not a single villager turned up. For more than a year, Winchester City Council has been holding every other cabinet meeting in a different location around the district. The aim is to reflect the diversity and geographic scope of the district, which covers a wide area of central Hampshire. It was hoped it would ensure the meetings were more accessible to residents from different areas and encourage people to interact more closely with their elected representatives. However, civic chiefs were criticised after November's meeting in South Wanston, when the public gallery only included the regular opposition councillors and former Labour city councillor Patrick Davis. Addressing the cabinet at the time, Mr. Davis said, "It doesn't work. All the items on the agenda relate to central Winchester. There's no local people present." This was supported by Lib Dem councillors Lucille Thompson and Eleanor Bell. Councillor Thompson said, "When we have an agenda like we have today, it does seem bizarre we are here. There's nobody here from South Wanston." However, council leader Caroline Horrell defended the project And she said, "We have made the commitment to do cabinet meetings on the road every other meeting. We are trying to be as open as possible." Since then, the council has published the scheme several times on social media accounts. And the next cabinet on the road will be at the Wickham Centre, Wickham, at 4:30 p.m. on Wednesday, the 23rd of January.
Firm expands its drone courses. Hampshire Business IRED, which is spelled small I, capital R-E-D, has launched commercial drone flying training courses after being officially approved. The business is a pioneer in infrared technology, and in recent years it has taken off after combining drones with its sophisticated cameras. Now it is able to train drone pilots at its centre in Emsworth to meet standards set by the Civil Aviation Authority, CAA. The firm also runs courses on using infrared cameras and is now one of the country's leading training centres that can provide both drone and infrared training. Those who complete the drone course receive a Commercial Remote Pilot Qualification, CRPQ, which can then be used to attain Permissions for Commercial Operations, PFCO, from the CAA. Students are taught about operating procedures, airmanship, aviation safety, charts and navigation, and night flying training is also available. There are countless applications for drone usage, including in agriculture, search and rescue, 3D modelling, inspection of renewable energy sources and photography. Alan Mack, MP, who recently visited the business, said, "I was delighted to visit fast-growing local business IRED. Thermal imaging using drone technology is used in the building of electrical, veterinary and solar industries, amongst many others. The company is a fantastic example of a local business exploiting opportunities created by disruptive new technology to secure jobs and grow the local economy. With similar businesses following IRED's lead, Britain will be in an excellent position to lead the world in advanced technology." The need for better training was potentially seen with the chaos at Gatwick Airport over Christmas.
And this is an article about HMV. Excuse me. The future of a major Winchester store is in doubt after high street music chain HMV went into administration. The business has become the first high street casualty after Christmas after it confirmed that it appointed administrators. HMV stores are continuing to trade while options are explored, including a potential sale, KPMG said. However, the loyalty points section website has been taken down. The company operates from nearly 130 stores across the UK, including 9 FOP stores, and employs 2,000 permanent staff. The appointment of administrators was confirmed following a hearing before the High Court judge on December the 28th. Will Wright, partner at KPMG and joint administrator, said, "Whilst we understand that it has continued to outperform the overall market decline in physical music and visual sales, as well as growing a profitable e-commerce business, the company has suffered from the ongoing wave of digital disruption sweeping across the entertainment industry. This has been in addition to the ongoing pressures facing many high street retailers, including weakening consumer confidence, rising costs and business rate pressures. Over the coming weeks, we will endeavour to continue to operate all stores as a going concern while we assess the options for the business, including a possible sale. Gift vouchers for HMV will be honoured so long as the stores continue to trade," administrators said. Back in 2013, administrators faced an angry backlash after customers found their vouchers and gift cards had become worthless overnight. "It is unusual for administrators to honour gift vouchers, and they do not normally give refunds for them either. But after protests, the then administrators, Deloitte, said gift cards would be honoured. Will Wright from KPMG said, "Over the coming weeks, we will endeavour to continue to operate all stores as a going concern while we assess options for the business, including a possible sale. Customers with gift cards are advised that the cards will be honoured as usual while the business continues to trade." HMV has had a store in Winchester since the 1990s, but it has only been in its current location in the Brooks for a little over 4 years. It moved from the High Street to the Brooks in November 2014.
This article is advising us that nominations are now open for the Hero Awards. Residents are being urged to celebrate unsung heroes as the High Sheriff Community Awards open for nominations. The annual awards are held to honour public servants, individuals, volunteers, charities and community groups who enhance their communities. High Sheriff of Hampshire for 2018-2019, Mark Thistlethwaite, said, "The awards are to honour those who deserve special recognition for their good work and who go beyond the call of duty in their everyday activities in the area of law and order-related projects that enhance safety and cohesion in local communities. This is an important part of the High Sheriff's role, and I look forward to recognising the hard work of local people and local organisations that work so hard to make their communities a better and safer place to live and work." Grant Cornwell, Chief Executive of the Hampshire and Isle of Wight Community Foundation, which puts on the awards, added, "HIWCF is delighted to partner the High Sheriff in organising these annual honours, enabling hard-working individuals and community groups that do so much in our local communities to be recognised for their impact on keeping Hampshire residents safe. The awards will be on March the 13th at the Great Hall in Winchester."
News in brief. Transport views. There are just a few days left to have a say on the future on transport in Winchester. The Winchester Movement strategy, which is looking to improve how people travel in and around Winchester over the next 20 to 30 years, is currently being consulted on, but will close at 11:59pm on Sunday, January the 13th. As previously reported, Hampshire County Council, working in partnership with Winchester City Council, released the Emerging Strategy document in November. It suggested a range of measures in a bid to cut city centre traffic and improve air quality. They include increasing capacity for park and ride services, giving buses priority over cars through measures such as bus gates in Southgate Street and Chessel Street and bus lanes in Andover Road, consolidated parking in larger out-of-city centre car parks rather than increasing city centre spaces, enhancing cycling and pedestrian routes across the city with a reallocation of road space along the full length of North Walls, and finally, changing parts of the one-way system. If those measures fail to improve congestion in the city, a range of charging zones could be considered. To take part in the consultation, call 0300 555 1388. And that's 0300 555 1388.
Counting all the animals at the zoo. Excuse me. After counting down the seconds to the new year, keepers at Marwell Zoo started to count their animals. Keepers have been carrying out their annual audit of every species in the park. The task is led by Zoo Registrar Debbie Pearson, who is busy tallying up around 2,000 animals across 143 species. However, those figures will increase due to the significant breeding successes of species including Grevy's zebra, Hartman's mountain zebra, as well as the arrival of animals for the Tropical House. Debbie said, "Every year we complete an audit in accordance with zoo legislation, to ensure that the numbers we have on record tally with the animals we have on the ground before sending the final figures to our local authority. I think this year we have around 2,000 to 2,500 animals across 152 different species. The opening of the Tropical House certainly has kept me on my toes. And there is a number of very lovely photographs, very well taken, if I might add, There are penguins, and there's the zebra with its calf. There's the carnival keeper, Carrie Arnold, with Banu, the bicharong, who has a new arrival for 2018. We can't decide quite what he looks like. He looks as though he's got a pointed nose, and he's quite chubby. And he's taking a great interest in the census board. They're the meerkats, and they're just sort of four of them just standing looking at the zookeeper. And there's, again, the registrar, Debbie Pearson, with, I think they're probably zebras. There's the keeper, Amy Denny, counting the white-faced Saki monkeys. And my various favourite, I've saved for the last. There's two pictures. Carnival keeper Ashley Ball with an Amur Tiger bagel. And he's by the window and she's looking at him. But in the second picture, Bagel has his nose right up against the glass and is looking inquisitively at the stock take.
And this is an article about the lake being searched in a police probe, and is accompanied with a photograph of a couple of the policemen on the lake in an open boat doing the search. Police deployed a remote-controlled submarine as part of a fresh hunt for clues in an attempted murder investigation. Officers searched the water in a lake just off Stoneham Lane, Eastleigh, last Thursday. Police say the hunt is part of their investigation into a serious assault in Hindsburg Close, Eastleigh, on December the 21st. It comes after a 23-year-old from Winchester was rushed to Southampton General Hospital with life-threatening head injuries. A 17-year-old man and a 17-year-old woman, both from Eastleigh, were later arrested on suspicion of attempted murder. They later revealed no further action would be taken against the woman. She was also arrested on suspicion of assisting an offender and has been released under investigation for this. A 48-year-old man from Burselden was arrested on suspicion of causing grievous bodily harm and has been released with no further action. The 17-year-old boy, who was arrested on suspicion of attempted murder, has been bailed until Saturday, January the 19th.
Fears growing over threat of no deal. The country's five main business groups have issued a strongly worded warning about a no-deal Brexit, saying many firms are now reaching the point of no return. Contingency plans are being put in place for the UK leaving the EU without a deal, which are a significant drain on companies' time and money, the government was told. Firms are pausing or diverting investment that should be boosting productivity, jobs and pay, said the British Chambers of Commerce, CBI, EEF, Institute of Directors and Federation of Small Businesses. A joint statement said, businesses have been watching in horror as politicians have focused on factional disputes rather than practical steps that business needs to move forward. The lack of progress in Winchester means that the risk of a no-deal Brexit is rising. With just 100 days to go, the suggestion that no deal can be managed is not a credible proposition. The five warned businesses would face massive new customs costs and tariffs, and disruption at ports could destroy supply chains. As a result of the lack of progress, the government is understandably now in a place where it must step up no deal planning. But it is clear there is simply not enough time to prevent severe dislocation and disruption in just 100 days, said the joint statement. The business groups added that responsibility for finding a way forward now rests with MPs, urging them to talk to local businesses over the festive break to help realise that the future course of the economy is in their hands. A top business advisor said Britain's army of small firms are being hung out to dry by the government and should ready themselves for the hardest EU divorce imaginable. Paul Hodges, who runs the company Ready for Brexit, warned that all roads lead to no deal. As it stands, the law states that we leave the EU on March the 29th, 2019. There simply aren't the numbers in Parliament to overturn that. That is the default position now. There isn't a majority for anything else either, and businesses need to wake up and prepare, he said. Mr. Hodges is offering businesses advice on customs, tax and employment regulation as they anticipate an avalanche of new bureaucracy and trade barriers if Britain crashes out of the EU without a deal.
The system is failing victims. Excuse me. Just one in every 60 rape cases reported in Hampshire ends with the suspect being charged, new figures show. The rate is significantly lower than for crime overall in the area, with sexual violence charity Rape Crisis saying that the justice system is failing victims and survivors of rape. Between April and June this year, 538 rape cases were closed by Hampshire Constabulary. Of those, just 9 resulted in a suspect being charged or ordered to appear in court. Charges were less likely for rape than other sexual offences in Hampshire, for which 5% of the 865 cases reported resulted in a suspect being charged. For other cases of violence against the person, 10% resulted in a charge. In nearly half of rape reports, the cases were closed because of lack of evidence, with the victim unwilling to support further police action. Across England and Wales, a suspect was charged in 4% of rape cases and 8% of other sexual offences. Katie Russell of Rape Crisis England and Wales said, "These figures are extremely concerning, but reflect what we already know, that the criminal justice system is currently failing victims and survivors of rape and sexual abuse and all forms of sexual violence. A complete overhaul of the criminal justice system in relation to sexual offences is long overdue, as is sustainable, dedicated funding for specialist sexual violence services to ensure victims and survivors have access to criminal and social justice. Across England and Wales, the rate at which charges are brought in rape cases has dropped sharply in recent years. In 2014-15, 22% of cases resulted in a charge or summons to court, though the number of cases reported had also increased significantly. The National Police Chiefs Council lead for Adult Sex Offences and Rape, Assistant Commissioner Martin Hewitt, said, "Significant improvements in the specialist training of officers, greater access to sexual assault referral centres and improved crime recording practices are all aimed at supporting those who have take the brave step in coming forward and improving the service they receive. The rate at which reports of crimes could lead to a charge were affected by many factors, including the length of time needed to investigate the victim's reports and review digital and third-party evidence," he said. A spokeswoman for the CPS commented that fewer rape cases were referred by police last year, but 47% of those received were charged. She said, "We have worked hard in recent years to improve how we deal with rape." A spokesperson for Hampshire Constabulary said, "Of course we're disappointed with the numbers of cases that result in a conviction, but the types of crimes are extremely difficult to investigate, and to be able to prove to a standard of beyond all reasonable doubt. What is encouraging is that the victims and survivors of rape have the confidence to report such crimes to the police."
And this is an article from the business section in the newspaper, and it's headlined, "Flag Up Late Payers," and is accompanied by a photograph of the Small Business Commissioner, Paul Upple. Almost a third of invoices issued by small businesses in the South East are not paid within the recommended time period of 30 days. According to new research undertaken by Lloyds Bank Commercial Banking, in partnership with the UK Small Business Commissioner, 32% of invoices were paid late in the region, and the average period between issue and receipt of payment is 38 days. Small Business Commissioner Paul Upple is to recommend a traffic light warning system to give small firms a signal about which large businesses are late payers. Legislation imposed in April 2017 required all large businesses to publish their payment practices. The research carried out sample data from 7,010 companies and revealed that, and there's a number of points here that came out, 65% of large businesses have an average bill payment time of more than 30 days. Secondly, more than a fifth, 22%, report an average bill payment time of 50 days and above. Third, the average time taken to pay is 37 days. Next, London companies are the most prompt paying bills in 34 days, followed by those in the Southwest paying after 35 days. Yorkshire and Humberside firms have the worst record, with payments taking 43 days, followed by companies in Northern Ireland and East Midlands with an average time of 41 days. And finally, only 14% of the companies analysed reported payment terms of 19 days or under. Mr. Apple argues that firms which take longer than 30 days to pay are, in effect, using their supply chain to finance their businesses. He believes a simple warning system will alert companies to the potential longer payment terms. Mr. Upper said, "The effect of late payment on small firms can be devastating. It impedes business growth, but also has an impact on the lives and mental health of those running small firms." There has been a requirement to report this information for nearly 2 years, and some businesses have now made 2 reports. The challenge now is to use the information to help small firms make sound decisions based on transparent information before deciding which larger businesses they should trade with. A traffic light system would be a simple and effective way of demonstrating which larger firms have structured their supply chain in such a way that it is more than an exchange of goods or services, but also resembles part of their financing model. Our initial findings indicate that almost 2/3 of payments are likely to be owed to smaller firms at any time.
Proposed home in garden is rejected by council planners. Winchester City Council has refused planning permission for a new dwelling in a back garden. Mr. and Mrs. Thomas applied for permission for the 3-bedroom scheme at Bramble Cottage, Dean Lane, Teg Down. They proposed a new house for the site of a double garage. But the planning committee went against their officer's advice to reject the scheme, saying it does not respond positively to the character and appearance of the local environment by virtue of its siting. The council has also deemed there would be unacceptable impact on 2 Dean Lane through overshadowing. This is the 3rd attempt to build on the plot, with plans refused in 1980 and after an appeal in 1982. The plan was unpopular, with 27 letters from 22 neighbouring properties. A report to the committee said one complaint was that all the extra buildings are causing a country lane to be urbanised, with too much filling in and cutting down trees. There was one letter of support for the scheme, designed by local practice Hugh Thomas Architects. Objector Christine Ashford of Downside Road wrote, "An application has been made in the past to shoehorn a house on this garden. It was rejected then and should be again. It is too overbearing for the plot and of a style more suited to an urban setting and not the character of this lane." Janet Hinksman of Dean Close wrote, "The plan shows the garage to be facing the pavement with no driveway, so cars will park on the pavement. This will impede traffic coming out of Teg Down and down Dean Lane, which is very busy. Traffic coming down Dean Lane has to be very careful, as traffic coming out of Teg Down are not always patient, so have yet another hazard, which will increase the possibility of an accident." And there is a photograph of this. And the original cottage is actually, Bramble Cottage, is actually quite small. And the area in front of it is really quite big. And there are no trees to cut down. And sitting off the other side of the road, there is a bench. Well, I don't know who's going to sit on it exactly on a major crossroads like that. But you just wonder quite why they are rejecting it. Because when you see what they accept around the place, You would have thought it would be fine. Oh, I'm not meant to comment. Sorry.
Thank you. That concludes the extracts for this week. So thank you to our editors, Margaret Boyden and Linda Vincent, and thanks to our copying, dispatch and memory stick preparation teams. And of course, thanks to our readers, Nikki Baring.
Goodbye.
Norma York.
Goodbye.
Andrew Parkinson.
Goodbye.
And from me, Keith Vincent, goodbye and do have an enjoyable week. When you finish with this week's recording, please put the memory stick back in the wallet and return it as soon as possible, placing the address label inside the wallet. Thank you.